This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we'll meet a German journalist who recently paddled the Great Colusa Blue Way in Lee County as part of his project to document adventures in all 50 states. And we'll chat with a local historian about a coquina clam chowder factory on Fort Myers Beach in the early years of the 20th century. But first, a global group of scientists has traced the evolutionary history of Florida's signature crop all the way back to the Himalayas in Southeast Asia around 8 million years ago. The team sequenced the genomes of 60 different types of citrus and identified 10 natural species, which not only gave them an evolutionary framework for citrus on a global scale, but also potential practical applications for modern-day growers. We're joined now by one of those researchers to learn more about how they did it and what these modern-day implications might be. Dr. Fred Gmitter is a professor of horticultural sciences with the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Citrus Research and Education Center. Dr. Gmitter, welcome to Gulf Coast Live. Thank you for being with us today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be with you, Julie.
We are talking about the evolutionary path of citrus on today's show. You can join our discussion by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK on Facebook. We're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCU. So let's start off by talking about where this research has been published. It just came out in the journal Nature. Is that a big deal for researchers?
Nature is a big deal. There are really two top-level research journals that we strive for. One is Science, and the other is Nature. So it's a pretty big deal, yes.
Well, congratulations. So was it you, or did you work on a team?
I'm a member of a team. There were four of us who really wrote this manuscript, and a small army of others who contributed a lot of the work in the lab and the sequencing and the analysis and so on. But the team members are Dr. Albert Wu, Dr. Dan Roxar, both of whom are with the Department of Energy Joint Genome Institute in California, and Dr. Manuel Colon, who is with the research unit in Valencia, Spain.
Wow, this is, well, Valencia sounds familiar when you think about oranges. This is a worldwide team, huh?
Absolutely, yes.
So how did the idea to do genomic sequencing on citrus trees first come about?
This is a long story, actually. In 2003, a group in Spain, actually also from Valencia, invited several researchers from around the world to come to Valencia to talk about how collectively an international team might be put together to sequence the citrus genome. At that time, we talked about the citrus genome. And this was around the time that the first human genome sequence was published. And we understood that this would be a huge opportunity to develop tools that would be of value to researchers going forward. At that time, we looked at about a $15 million price tag. And it took us until 2011 before the first citrus genomes were made publicly available. Since that time, the cost of sequencing has gone way down, and so as you look at the paper that we just published, there are 60 different genomes that were sequenced and analyzed.
How long does it take to sequence a genome? I mean, I can't imagine the first steps that one would take to do that. So what's the process like?
Well, you've got to extract high-quality DNA from the plant of interest, in our case, different kinds of citrus. And basically today it's done by commercial services. We send the DNA out to companies or institutes that are set up to do this. And we can have a sequence finished in a week or two, whereas our very first effort, it was a multi-year task. And the change has been just the explosive nature of the technology and how rapidly things have improved technologically.
Well, I mean, just less than a decade ago, the idea of something like 23andMe for human genetic sequencing was unheard of. So, yeah, things really have come along and changed quite a bit really quickly. So you analyzed 60 types of citrus. Can you give me a sense of which ones? Are they all different varieties that people would recognize?
Well, we did analyze many varieties that people would recognize. Previously, for example, we we sequenced the clementine, which is the small, easy-to-peel mandarins that come from California with different cute and clever names on them.
Cuties.
We sequenced sweet orange, but this current project covers everything from pomelos, which are one of the ancestors of the grapefruit. We sequenced grapefruit, sweet and sour oranges, lemons, limes, kumquats, and a number of citrus that most people have never even heard of before.
Yeah, there are quite a few, like Buddha's hand. That's one of them, right?
Buddha's hand. Some people know about that one.
That one's an odd look. That'll keep your memory. You won't forget when you see one of those. So you identified 10 natural species. What does that mean exactly?
Well, if you look at the history of citrus taxonomy, and taxonomy that being the classification of different kinds of citrus into species, there's been a lot of controversy over the past more than 100 years. There are these two concepts. There is the concept of lumpers, you know, those people who want to lump everything into very few categories. And on the other end of the spectrum are the splitters, those people who look at a citrus tree and say, oh, that's a unique individual and a unique individual species. A lot of what went on in the past was based on the plant's characteristics. And, of course, we understand now that the characteristics of the plant and the fruit, for example, can change if they're grown in different environments in different locations. So those aren't absolute things that can be evaluated. A lot of the conclusions were based on opinions, sometimes personal opinions, sometimes culturally based opinions. And what we've done is to take genome sequencing, which is just hard, cold data, and analyze it. And what we've found is what we think we can state are actually 10 so-called natural species. These are kind of like the fundamental species. And to kind of illustrate this, maybe, Julie, the thing to think about is sweet orange. Sweet orange was considered to be a species, but actually all of the sweet oranges originated from one original type of orange that was found several thousand years ago. So it's not really a species in the sense. It's like if we cloned you, Julie, and we selected some clones that were blonde and redhead and black-haired, but basically they're all still the same Julie, that's what we have with the orange. But by looking at the genome of sweet orange, we've come to understand that it's actually a complex combination of pomelo sequences and mandarin sequences. And so we've been able to determine that orange is not a true species, but we can tell that there is a species called mandarin and there is a species called pomelo. And these things are, we would call maybe the founder species or the parentals.
Okay, so these 10 natural species, they're kind of like the parents of all the citrus that we know today.
Right.
And they've kind of come along throughout the thousands of years and eons. Well, I guess not eons. I don't want to get in scientific trouble. But if you're going through all the years and years and years, they just kind of have changed over time based on where they are grown. And how much has human interaction with citrus impacted the number of different types of species that we see today?
Virtually no human involvement with the species that we see today. It's really been a natural evolutionary process. In our paper, we describe a world 8 million years ago or more when the Indian tectonic plate was moving and smashing into the Asian tectonic plate. And, of course, that raised the Himalayas. And there was a primitive citrus ancestor that lived in this area 8, 9, 10 million years ago, and when this geological event took place, the land lifted and the climate changed, and things began to diversify and move in different directions through Asia and Southeast Asia. And as they did, they adapted to the different environments as they were changing, and from that arose the modern species. Most of what we know today, like sweet orange, is something of really very recent, you know, only a few thousands of years, or if we consider the grapefruit, it actually originated, less than 300 years ago. That's not a species either. Grapefruit's not a species either. It's another one of those things like the sweet orange. It's a unique individual from which lots of small variations arose.
And it wasn't one of the original citrus species back in the day. So now this is what I'm wondering about. Where'd that kumquat come from?
Kumquat is also something that evolved and split off several millions of years ago, and it's from the southern area of China. Let's put it that way, and down into what we used to call Indochina, Southeast Asia. We maintain in our paper that kumquat actually is quite similar to citrus, and it had previously been put into a different genus, a different category. And we tend to view it now, based on our information, as actually another citrus species.
Yeah, I'm no scientist, but I would have guessed citrus on that one, too.
Yeah.
If you're just joining the show, we're talking with UF researcher Dr. Fred Gmitter to discuss his recent research into the evolutionary path of citrus. And you can join the show by giving us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So I wanted to ask you, Dr. Gmitter, are there any of these 10 natural species that you identified as the originals, are they still around? Would we recognize them today?
Yes, you would recognize almost all of them. There is the pomelo, there are mandarins, there's something that we call citron. You mentioned the Buddha's hand, that's a kind of citron. Citron was one of the ancestors both of the lemon and the limes that we know. Many of them, they're all still around and you would recognize many, but not all of them.
So the team was able to trace citrus back 8 million years or so to the Himalayas. Is there any possible way to say what path it took getting out of the Himalayas and across Europe and then eventually to Florida?
That's very recent history.
Yeah, let's fast forward a lot.
Yeah, that's a real fast forward. So the citrus plants that we know and love really were restricted to southeastern and southwestern China, Asia, parts of China, parts of India. The first citrus to actually move out of Asia were these things called the citrons. And they traveled along the Silk Route, the Silk Road, through what we now know as Iran. And, if you look at some biblical text, they were familiar with the citron. I was lucky enough to visit some Roman mosaics in Sicily that were more than 2,000 years old, and they had depicted there a beautiful citron in the mosaic. So the citrons were the first to move, and that was, in the BCs, if you will. Mm-hmm. Next, there was a kind of citrus we call sour orange, which you might know as bitter orange or Seville orange, the one that the British people like to make marmalade with. Those and lemons came, and they were carried mostly by Arab traders, and that was in, 700 to 800 AD. The oranges didn't actually begin moving until the 1500s, and even though everyone knows mandarins today, the mandarins first arrived into Europe in the early 1800s. So a lot of this human-based movement of citrus is really just very recent.
Yeah, those bitter oranges are a critical element when you're marinating pork for a Cuban pork.
That's right.
An important part. That is really important. So then we got citrus in Florida in, the 1500s?
When the Spanish colonized St. Augustine, they brought sour oranges with them. And the local Native American people managed to get a hold of some of those sour oranges and seeds, and they began to plant them all over Florida. So there was a botanist who was exploring primitive Florida in the early 1800s, and when he came to a lake south of Gainesville, it was surrounded by sour orange trees, and he named it Orange Lake, and he concluded that this was a native species in Florida, not understanding that, in fact, it wasn't native at all. Mm-hmm. It had just been introduced by the Spanish and moved by the native people.
So what was considered conventional wisdom on where citrus came from before this study? Were there any big surprises? Did we always know that they came from Southeast Asia?
There, I mentioned earlier about opinions and controversy, and there were several schools of thought on this origin, this center of origin, actually. Some had claimed it was in India. Others claimed it was definitely in China. Very recently, there were some researchers from Australia who put forth the idea that actually it all originated in Australia and then moved northwest into India, into Asia, southern Asia. Based on the timing of the changes of the DNA that we document in our paper, it's very clear that that was not the path, that actually a citrus type had moved into Australia about 4 million years ago, and it diversified into some of the Australian forms. They have a type they call microcitrus and another called aromocitrus. And again, based on our analysis, we kind of view these as also a part of that group of natural citrus species.
All right, well, we have a phone call on the line from Mark in North Fort Myers who wants to ask a question. Mark, what would you like to ask?
Yes, I would like to ask Dr. Demeter, I believe it is.
Demeter?
Yes.
Yes. I'm also a botanist, but I don't specialize in citrus, but I am curious, where does the calamondin fit in?
We sequenced the calamondin actually as well, and it had always been hypothesized that calamondin was a hybrid of some kind of kumquat with some kind of mandarin, and our sequence information completely and totally supports that idea.
So it's a kumquat mandarin cross?
That's right.
All right. Mark, does that answer your question?
Yes, absolutely. Just what people have been saying for a very long time.
Okay.
I'm glad to hear.
Yeah, that was one of the opinions
thank you.
That we would prove to be correct.
I'm sorry?
I said that was one of the opinions that we have demonstrated is correct, that calamondin was a kumquat mandarin hybrid.
Yeah, and there are not a lot of those around, really, as far as I know.
That's right.
We do have someone here that has a grove of those growing, and they're making sweets out of them. Calamondin Cafe, I think it is, here in Fort Myers. So if you would like to try them, that's one place to find them. So I wanted to talk a little bit about some of the modern-day implications of your research. How might knowing this history inform how growers proceed in terms of finding new citrus varieties that can resist some of the diseases we're seeing, things like citrus greening?
Yeah, from this work, there's no instant silver bullet for the citrus greening problem that many of your listeners are probably familiar with. However, as we study different kinds of citrus, as a plant breeder, which is what I do actually, I'm a plant breeder, a citrus breeder, we find certain kinds of citrus tolerate this disease much better than other kinds of citrus. Our oranges and our grapefruit are actually quite sensitive to citrus greening. But there are things like lemon. There's a variety that the University of Florida released called Sugar Bell, which is kind of a fresh fruit type variety, that are actually very, very tolerant of HLB or citrus greening disease. And there are some other types, again, most people wouldn't know them because they're not commercial types. But we find there are different things that have high degrees of tolerance to citrus greening. And as we have this sequence information, you know, the genome sequence really is a full descriptive catalog of all the genes and all the variations of the genes within the plants. Potentially, it gives us a way to be able to identify those regions of the genomes that are responsible for the disease resistance. And we can use that information then potentially to begin to develop more and more tolerant and perhaps even resistant types of varieties. It's important for not just disease resistance, not just citrus greening, but for any attribute that, you know, we want to improve. If we want to develop better color or better flavor or, you know, resistance to a number of other diseases or cold or salinity in the soil, you know, we now have the blueprints for those plants that have those characteristics, And they give us markers, if you will, that as breeders we can use to identify the good genetic combinations that we can make by traditional classical breeding approaches.
So for people who might not be all the way up on the disease of citrus greening, can you give us kind of a Cliff Notes version of that?
Wow, citrus greening is the most serious disease of citrus that you can imagine. It has resulted in a reduction in productivity in the Florida citrus industry of nearly 80% since it was first seen or found here in Florida in 2005. There is no cure for citrus greening. The fruit that are produced on affected trees generally are very poor quality. Frequently, they drop to the ground, and many times the trees will just continue to decline until they finally die.
That's kind of a long time. It takes them a while to do that, too. So you're going to sit there and keep looking at it and hoping this season it's going to happen, and you still can't get anything off the trees. Does it mainly just affect orange trees or other? What kind of citrus is more susceptible or less?
Oranges are very susceptible. When we first got the disease, it looked like grapefruit was more tolerant than sweet orange. But actually, once grapefruit begins to decline, the trees get much worse. We haven't been able to do much to help grapefruit trees, whereas some growers using improved nutritional approaches have been able to turn their sweet orange trees around. They're not cured. They're not as productive as they were before the disease, but they can continue to produce somewhat of a crop on an annual basis, whereas grapefruit don't seem to do that. Lemon trees are very, very tolerant of the disease. The variety I mentioned earlier, the Sugar Bell that we released, is really right now perhaps the most tolerant variety we know in Florida. It's being produced on a limited basis, but if there are homeowners out there who are interested in getting a tree that can survive greening, Sugar Bell is something they ought to be on the lookout for.
And Sugar Bell's a lemon?
No, Sugar Bell is a mandarin hybrid. It's,
oh, okay.
It's very similar to the Honey Bell or the Mineola.
So, and the Honey Bell is a little bit more susceptible, but the Sugar Bell is less.
Right.
I gotcha. So tell me a little bit about the relationship between oranges and lemons. Are they kind of on the same branch of the family tree? No pun intended.
Not really the same branch. So we have to go back to three of the founder species, and that's the citron and the pomelo and the mandarin. I mentioned earlier that sweet orange is a very complicated mixed hybrid of pomelo and mandarin. Now, the sour orange, the Seville orange, the bitter orange we were talking about, that's a very simple direct hybrid of pomelo and mandarin. It's just like the first generation cross, and that's the sour orange. Now, take the sour orange and cross that with citron, and from that, we got lemon. That's what we've been able to demonstrate is the ancestry of lemon. So lemon has three of these fundamental species in its background. Sweet orange has two of the three.
It's interesting because there's some citrus that just didn't go from Europe to America. We haven't seen a whole lot of bergamot over here. We haven't seen, there's one called Chedrol, I think it is, down in Italy, that I never have seen here. It's a big green one. I think that's
Chedrol is a kind of citron.
Yeah.
And the bergamot is a fairly complicated hybrid that's very similar to sour orange, but not exactly, and something like lemon, but not exactly.
Yeah. The press release that you sent out says that the new research clarifies the genomic nature of the sweet orange, which might lead to more types of fruit that can be converted to USDA grade A orange juice, which could decrease the cost of OJ to consumers. Can you explain how that would work?
I can, I hope. orange juice, what we call grade A USDA approved orange juice, is something that by regulation, and these are regulations that were established by the industry, by regulation can only come from something that's Citrus sinensis, the species Citrus sinensis, which we know now is not a species. It's sweet orange, and it's this complicated mixture of pomelo and mandarin. Okay, in our breeding program, we have a number of different mandarin hybrids that have some pomelo in their background and so on and so forth that are actually very tolerant of citrus greening, number one. And number two, significantly, they are very similar in flavor and aroma to sweet orange. In fact, one of my colleagues here, Dr. Yu Wang, published a paper very recently to study what is the essence of the flavor of mandarin and what is the essence of the flavor of orange. And so we can find mandarin hybrids, actually, that most consumers would think is orange. They would taste it, they'd say, oh, that's orange juice. So we have something that looks like and tastes like orange juice and has a much higher level of tolerance to citrus greening disease. And so if the industry could adapt these new kinds of varieties and change the regulation, and based on the genomic information we have, there's all the scientific support in the world for saying that these things are almost like sweet orange genomically. And if people can't tell the difference and they're tolerant to HLB, to citrus greening, it may lead to a time when we can be producing something that everyone will still think is orange juice. We'll be happy because it's tastes just like orange juice, looks just like orange juice, and comes from more tolerant trees. And if growers aren't spending $3,000 an acre to manage citrus greening,
it'll bring that cost down.
Prices hopefully would come down.
Yeah, bring the cost down and help prop the citrus industry back up. I want to ask you before we run out of time real quickly, what is next in your research? I mean, we've got this done. What are you doing now?
Well, I'm still a citrus breeder, and we're looking at releasing a lot of new varieties. But in the area of the genomic studies, we found some things that we weren't aware of that are true citrus species, and we believe there are probably several more of these kinds of things that we'd like to look at. There's a lot of interest in how citrus diversified as it moved into Japan and through Japan. Very curious ideas and some of the same sorts of things as citrus diversified into Southeast Asia. You mentioned, for example, the bergamot. You know, there are a lot of things like this where we're not absolutely clear of what they are and how they were created, what they're made up of. And so there remain a lot of riddles that we still can hopefully answer. And, of course, for our Florida industry, the main target always remains citrus greening resistance. And so we continue to use genomics to try and get to that point in time.
Well, we look forward to hearing about any new discoveries that you make. So do keep us in the loop.
We'll do that, Julie.
All right.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to talk with you and all of your listeners down there in Southwest Florida. I hope some of those Immokalee area growers are listening to this.
Yeah, me too. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this part of today's show. I want to thank my guest, Dr. Fred Gemitter. He's a professor of horticultural sciences and researcher with the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Citrus Research and Education Center. Dr. Gemitter, thanks for joining us today to talk about this fascinating research into Florida's signature crop. Coming up, WGCU's Jessica Mazzaro sits down with a German journalist who recently took a paddle trip down the Great Colusa Blue Way in Lee County. It's part of his ongoing project to document his adventures in all 50 states. I'm Julie Glenn. This is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.